to use the mix and to I will occasionally ask the experts in the audience to actually provide the correct statements when possible. Yes. But okay, so I would like to just ramble about conformal blocks in Kac-Moody or Virasoro or W algebras. So the first, I should begin by trying to explain what a conformal block is. So in a physical setup, conformal blocks sort of appear when you're studying two-dimensional conformal field theories. These conformal field theories will have some operator algebra. In particular, you might have some holomorphic operators in that algebra, which have very constrained behavior when they go close to each other because of holomorphicity. Correlation functions of these holomorphic operators will typically be rational functions in the position of the holomorphic functions in the position of the operators on the surface where you're doing your calculation. And will also be constrained by what you know about the behavior of these operators, they collide. For example, if you're looking at a free theory, you have something like world identities, which tell you that some operators satisfy equations of motion, like del bar equal to zero, except at the location of other operators, where the equation of motion are correct in a specific way. And so you have information about the residue of these rational functions, the holomorphic functions that the operators come together. And you might look for all possible solutions to these constraints. The actual correlation function of the theory will be only some specific solution, but you can just study in general all possible solutions and then try to move from there. So for example, let me consider a setup when you have something called a Kac-Moody algebra. So a Kac-Moody algebra means that you have some objects, some currents, which live in the dual of a Lie algebra. I think the dual, of course I might be confusing the Lie algebra with its dual. And they are sort of one-forms, holomorphic one-forms. So, or melomorphic behave, I mean, as you move at this point around the surface, behave as melomorphic one-forms. The cotangent bundle of the surface. So very concretely, it means that if I have my Riemann surface and I have some local coordinate patch and I have my J of Z here at some point in this local coordinate, and then I have some other local coordinate patch, Z prime, with some transformation, Z equal to some function of Z prime, then J, whenever I have an expression where J is in this patch, and I want to compare to an expression where J is in this patch, I have to put a Jacobian. Okay. So suppose I have a theory which has these currents. Mm-hmm.
So what happens at the poles?
Right. So in a Kac-Moody, it's characterized by this fact that as two of these currents collide, uh, there is a specific behavior. So there is at most a double pole with a specific coefficient, and then a single pole with a specific coefficient plus regular things. This thing is called an OPE.
So this is why you say they're meromorphic.
Right. Which poles at the position of the other currents. Now, now let's be very concrete. What is going to be a conformal block? It's going to be a list of functions or sections. So let me take some Riemann surface C. Okay. So let's say I have a number. I'll have a holomorphic one form on C. I'll have something which is a meromorphic on C times C with pole on the diagonal, and symmetric under exchanging C and W. Okay? And then I have something with 3J's. And so on and so forth. And a conformal block will be a long list of such sections which satisfy this. So in particular, like this will have to be something which has a double pole proportional to this, and a simple pole proportional to this. This will have to be something that has double poles when these two meet, proportional to this, and single poles proportional to this. Okay, so you get an infinite space of possible things, and infinitely many relations between them. And a conformal block should be the space of solutions of these equations. Okay. Now, to do things really well, it would be better not to just keep track of the solutions of the equations, but sort of the obstructions to solving these equations, and so on and so forth. Well, this. Okay. See, if you look at, there is a finite dimensional space of holomorphic one forms on a curve. Then there is a finite dimensional space of one forms in true arguments which have a double pole of this form proportional to this, and a simple pole proportional to this, and so on and so forth. So, of course, it might be possible that requiring this to exist will put some constraints on this. Okay, it's possible that if you look at all forms with two arguments like this, with this double pole and holomorphic on the surface, there will be some restriction on the one on the residual. It's possible, in which case it will cut down the dimension of this space. So as you keep going, it's possible that you need to both restrict what you had before and add some new freedom. Of course, it's not obvious that solutions to this would exist at all. Um, if the group, if the algebra is abelian, if you're doing U1, okay, let me ignore that for a moment. Okay, so there is this problem. It might not have solutions. There are solutions, it's, they're called conformal blocks. Yes?
So I'm gonna get a sense of like, how bad could it be? Like, could I in general kind of set the first seven entries on my list to be zero and then still have non-zero solutions, like non-zero data in the higher things? I mean, you know, maybe,
yes,
maybe the two variable thing just is regular. In the first,
yes, two, absolutely. That's true. That's true. You could gain things as you go. Now, so suppose I have some solution of this problem. There are some interesting things that that can be done. So, as I said, there is a better way to define these conformal blocks and sort of a more derived way, which keeps track of also obstructions to solving these equations. I will try to remember later on how it's done. At least I've heard it's done mathematically. Now, what I want to remark is that for Katz-Moody, this problem can actually be defined more, can be generalized, where you have a Riemann surface and a bundle. A principal G bundle on the curve. What does it mean having a G bundle? Having a G bundle means that as you build up your Riemann surface and you try to glue different patches together, you allow yourself to also has some group transformations, holomorphic group transformations from one patch to the other. Okay, so now you had to give me some z as a function of z prime, and then also maybe some function of some group element, which tells you how to connect the Lie algebra here and the Lie algebra here. Now, the reason you can do this is because some very nice property of this OPE. So suppose I'm looking, I have some objects which are behaving like this in some patch. Okay, first of all, I should have already discussed why this OPE is compatible with this. So but it's a simple calculation. It's sort of you change coordinates both in Z and in W, you get some Jacobian. But the Jacobian cancels nicely against against the transformation of this as z goes to w. But what I want to show is something else. Suppose now I replace j with g acting on j, with g of z acting on I don't know if to put in the okay, I'll put the indices. Okay, suppose I try to transform both J's by acting with some group element on them. Well, now I get things like this. Now, as z approaches w, I can replace this with g of z in a power series around z. In the leading order, I just get g and g acting on delta, which gets on the killing form, which is invariant under group transformation. So I go back here. But there is the next term in the expansion. which looks like, which is going to look like essentially this. Which goes to adapt to this F over Z minus W. Okay? So, as a result, the OPE has changed, unless I change the transformation of my current. So, if I change the way my current transforms, I say that, J of Z in the new patch is G acting on dot current. Now, I never remember if this is plus or minus, forgive me. I don't remember. Okay, del G, G inverse del G. Then the OPEs are consistent. So I can sort of try to keep the problem well defined.
So I'm just trying to understand what you explained, right? So I explained that a kind of Riemann surface of this will G bundle, then we can construct some kind of operator product algebra.
I'm trying to say that this problem remains well defined if I try to transform this into sections of a bundle, of a principal G bundle.
This problem, you mean what?
This set of equations that defines conformal blocks. So the definition of conformal blocks remains well defined when I try to make this transform as sections of a G bundle, of a principal G bundle, but only if actually twist their transformation law. Notice that this is the same transformation law as a connection on the bundle. So roughly, K del minus J is well defined. Anyway, so if I twist the transformation law a little bit, I can extend this problem to conformal blocks. I'm saying that the definition, I can still define conformal blocks
yes.
on a Riemann surface equipped with a G bundle.
Yeah,
now, conformal blocks are going to be defined like this. It's a list of correlation functions, candidate correlation functions, where this is now an holomorphic section of an affine bundle defined like this. This is an holomorphic section of the affine bundle on C times C. With specific OPEs,
yeah, so
and so on and
just
so forth.
Find such things.
That's right, find such things. Find an infinite list of these candidate correlation functions compatible with the OPE.
Can I ask a stupid question? These FABCs, how are they related to the algebra? Are these structural?
Oh, sorry, yeah, these are the structural constants of the Lie algebra.
Okay, so yes. These come from commutators? Or these come from kind of universal involvements?
No, from the commutators, meaning if the Lie algebra, if I take two generators of the Lie algebra.
Sure. So is there some sort of commutator implicit in this operator product?
I will discuss the relation to commutators in a second. But I wanted to first define in general which sort of conformal blocks you can talk about when you have Kac-Moody. So when you have Kac-Moody, you can think about conformal blocks on a Riemann surface with a bundle. This is one type of problem you might ask about. And so if these solutions exist, they're kind of a sheaf on the space of bundles, but there is actually more structure than that, because there is a notion of parallel transport in this. Meaning there is a very amusing fact. So suppose you want to change a bundle on a Riemann surface. How do you do that? Well, there are many ways, but one way to make an infinitesimal change is that you can cut the Riemann surface and glue it back in a slightly different way. So you can say that you glue it back by an infinitesimal transformation uh, uh, like actually I'm calling point epsilon. So you can take your group element to be 1 plus epsilon, okay? Now, I could study the conformal blocks on this deformed, slightly deformed bundle.
Sorry, I'm confused. You deformed the bundle, but not the module, like not the geometry.
Not the geometry of the surface that I'm not touching yet. So I just changed the bundle. So I want my J's. Okay, and I'm trying to find a solution of this equation on a slightly modified bundle. Well, it turns out that there is a very natural way to produce such a solution. Take your candidate, take a conformal block in the original surface, add an extra current, contract it with your epsilon. And do a contour integral. Around this annulus. So I would like to argue that this correlation function will behave exactly as this. And the reason it happens is because something nice happens when you transport a current across this contour integral. So when you try to transport a current across this contour integral, you might get an extra contribution from the pole. This extra contribution can be read off from the OPE, and you get a term proportional to the current itself and a term proportional to 1, which reproduces exactly the infinitesimal version of this transformation. So if you give me a conformal block on some bundle, conformal block on some bundle, you can find canonically a conformal block on nearby bundles. So there is sort of a flat connection in the space of bundles. This conformal block depends on the bundles holomorphically, and there is natural flat connection. So there is so I think the correct mathematical statement is that they are a twisted D module on the space of bundles. The space of conformal blocks.
Does twisting mean it's not really a flat bundle, but it's like it's a projective flat?
Right.
Yeah, integral twisting of probably means that just sections of some line bundle.
Yes.
If twisting is integral, that means that it's sections of some line bundle on the module.
Yeah, that's right. What is going on? The point is that this expression would make most sense if this was actually true, one form section of the affine bundle, of the gauge bundle. But it's not quite. So this operational parallel transport, it's not fully consistent. There is a bit of a small amount of inconsistency. But anyway, which is controlled by this. Another way to,
So what's the problem when you do a group transformation, this integral does not remain the same integral?
When you try to sort of commute, do true transformations. So when you sort of try to move by epsilon and then by epsilon prime, or the other way around, things almost work, but you get an extra overall phase.
So doesn't that mean that this connection is not flat?
Objectively flat, right?
It's, yes. A flat connection would be a flat connection holomorphically is given by a bundle together with an holomorphic connection on it, and I think the bundle is supposed to be trivial. have no C1. Sorry. Okay, here is one of the points that I was really hoping for some help from the audience. Can you remind me what the definition of a twisted module is? And why?
No, I mean, that's
because smoothly conformal blocks are.
For a non-integral twisting, it actually sometimes will define it, but for an integral twist method, somehow just if you twist it by just a line bundle. So if you have a line bundle, then you can consider just the sort of differential operators. I mean, D-modules are modules with differential operators. You can consider differential operators which act not on functions but on sections of a line bundle. And then twist a D-module with a module over that. But the claim is that we can define this even for a fractional power or for any complex power of a line bundle, you can define, I mean, if you have a line bundle, then you can define canonical algebra, I mean, sheaf of algebras, which depends on a complex number, such that for an integral number, that's the same as differential operators collecting etching on that integral power of that line bundle.
Yeah, so I think that, like I said, I think is that the point is that locally things are fine, but not globally in the space of bundles. Right, so this, here I'm telling you what I'm doing with infinitesimal transformations. Back here.
It's general. So suppose you have some variety on the step, whatever, on which you have a line bundle.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose you give two pieces, right? You have given a line bundle and a complex number. Then the claim is that there's a canonical sheaf of algebras which sort of corresponds to, which you should be thinking of as differential operators on the corresponding complex power of that line bundle. So complex power of the line bundle doesn't make sense. But first of all, if it's an integral power, it does literally make sense, and then it will be just differential operators on that on that line bundle.
Yes.
But the claim is that the notion of differential operators on the complex line on the complex power of a line bundle, you can still define. You cannot define what is this complex power itself, but the notion of differential operators on it makes sense.
I mean, it's basically just having a fixed connection with a fixed curvature rather than having a connection which is fixed to be flat. And I mean, I think basically what you're saying is, you know, the line bundle by Chernevay kind of tells us basically what the curvature of any connection on that line bundle has to be. And it works perfectly fine to multiply that curvature by a scalar and say, look for connections that have this curvature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could say it like that.
Well, if you forget to O modules from twisted D modules, then what's the extra structure you need instead of saying
it's actually some algebra? Then you define some new algebra.
Let me.
Still confused. So still forget to O when you ask what's.
Okay, sorry. Let me try to say something that I think is kind of true at least. Right, so a D-module, as hearing, is something which has an action of differential operators. It's kind of a quantization of something that has an action of functions on the cotangent bundle. Because derivatives can be translated semi-classically thought of as momenta. So if I had this. If I look at the space, so as I was trying to say, right, J transforms as a holomorphic connection. Now, if you look at a space of bundles with an holomorphic connection, it's not quite the same as the cotangent bundle. So, what is the space of what is the cotangent bundle of the space of bundles? As I was saying, an infinitesimal change of a bundle is given by something like that. If you give me a one form on an annulus, defined on an annulus, this will give me a direction in the cotangent bundle. Because it's something like you can contract with infinitesimal deformation. So if J transformed really as a one form valued in the Lie algebra, then sort of this will be a quantum version of this correlation function will be sort of like a quantum version of polynomials in this direction, in this cotangent bundle. But instead it transforms like that. So my momenta, my are not transforming exactly by the Jacobian, they're transforming by a fine shift, then a fine shift. So this is a deformation of the cotangent bundle to the space of bundles, and the quantum version is a sort of twisted D module. But this twist is controlled by this parameter kappa. Okay, and indeed, as far as I understand, when you define these conformal blocks properly, the conformal blocks of Kac-Moody are a very specific D module, which is the D module of differential operators. So a D module is a module for this algebra differential operators, but as far as I understand, this is the algebra itself as a module.
And it's a module over Von Chi.
That's right. In the sense that I think if you try to define these twisted differential operators properly, you pretty much end up with, you know, symbols. Each of these J's are like the derivative in some direction on the bundle. And the fact that it's twisted should just turn out to give you the OP if you knew how to do that properly. I don't know. I don't, but I'm sure there are some people in the audience that told, when asked, define the twisted D-module differential operators. Twisted differential operators. Define twisted differential operators of Van G. Will be able to extract the OPEs and this definition by hand of conformal blocks. I'm making conformal blocks sound like something very complicated, but I wanted to give the physicists in the room the feeling that this is a very concrete thing, okay? You are just solving world identities step by step, carefully, and trying to keep track of obstructions when you cannot do this. But this can be formalized in mathematically precise way. So now let me make contact with commutators, as somebody in the audience asked. So suppose you have this common surface and a bunch of J's in some region, in some disk. And I suppose I take one of the J's that is, and I sort of try to do this sort of contour integral. But instead of going around a non-trivial cycle on the surface, I just go around a bunch of other operators. So this is really a disk. Something like integral z to the n j of z, and I bring it around the other insertions. So I want to say this properly. If there were no insertions, this does nothing. You can just shrink the loop, unless this power is negative. In which case you are extracting the coefficient of the expansions of J around this location. Now, I want to take these conformal blocks and sort of build more things out of it. So given any conformal block, I can start defining new objects where I've inserted a whole bunch of these contour integrals. Around some location. Okay, let me pick a point P, where I'm not doing anything special, but I'm trying to define a new function where it's going to be a function of the position of a bunch of j's. And how do I compute it? I take these j's, I add another bunch of j's, and I do these contour integrals. I could give this a name. Okay. It's just a name. I have a whole bunch of these functions for each choice of these numbers. But now, because of this, now I can ask what happens if I try to compare this calculation done with some order of the, with integrals done in some order, with the calculation done with integrals in a different order. Again, I'll catch OP because I catch X contributions because this integral might have a pole here. So when I try to bring it across, I get something extra. These contributions are controlled by the OPEs. And so you find that if you exchange the order of two of these J's, you need to pay a price. So maybe this is equal to the same correlation function with N2 and N3 exchanged. Plus something, plus FABC, the correlation function with JC minus N2 minus N3 inserted, and maybe a contribution with K, which comes in only if N2 plus N3 is zero. So this sort of algebra, so you got sort of a Lie algebra.
Coefficients of this product, right? But why do you think of them as going around some loops?
No, I just gave a prescription. I wanted to give meaning to this symbol, and I just define it like that. The symbol equals the correlation function with a bunch of extra currents multiplied by z to the n and integrated over.
Why do you integrate it over the scale?
Around the point. Right, and a point has been specified here. So this algebra is called the Kasabudi algebra. So when you define conformal blocks, you can sort of start thinking from here or start thinking from there. It's equivalent to the OPEs. I want to start from the OPEs, and then you can get to the algebra. So, in a sense, you can think about this as sort of the most general modification you can do at a point. You know, bring in as many of the currents as you can, extract whatever coefficients. So, this behaves like a linear function on a module for this algebra. So I can define a module for this algebra this way. I can say, let me take this module, say that the positive modes of the algebra annihilated, the non-negative modes of the algebra annihilated. We know this is true because the first guy has no singularity at P, and let the other J's act freely. So this is a physically, it's called the Verma module. Mathematically, it's not called the Verma module. It's called, I think, a Weyl module, used from the. But anyway, so it's see inside this Kazmuli algebra, there is in particular a copy of the Lie algebra, the J0A. If you look at the commutator, behave like the Kazmuli algebra.
So you write m greater than zero or m greater
than equal. So this here I have a vector which is a singlet of this.
I would actually call it vacuum module.
Vacuum module, yes. That's right. It's a vacuum module. It has this vector and then a whole bunch of other vectors generated by acting with negative modes. Etc., etc. So let me call this the vacuum module. I don't know if it's a good name. But so what I'm trying to say is that given a conformal block, which was just this collection of functions, you can extend it to sort of correlation functions with insertions of generic element of this vacuum module at one point P. So you can have conformal blocks when you have a bunch of currents. And at zero, so at some point P, you can insert any vector V inside this vacuum module. Okay? So so this might seem a pretty boring construction. I've not added any information. I just sort of repackaged this information a bit. Although, as far as I understand, it can be useful in defining the conformal blocks as in a derived sense.
What are we defining right now? So we're defining.
I define the conformal
general,
blocks.
The most general notion of conformal blocks possible in the Kazmuli setting, or what?
I'm trying to get there, yes. To get to the most general, interesting conformal blocks. So we started the conformal blocks justifying the Riemann surface.
So
you said they could be also coupled to a bundle.
So the first point you made is that you should be thinking about conformal blocks as a D module on the modular space on the modular space of bundles.
That's right.
So now you're making some different
points. I'm making a different point that you can sort of reinterpret these conformal blocks without adding or removing any information also as something which allows you to insert sort of operators associated to elements in the vacuum module, but this is boring. Here I've done nothing new. But this perspective allows me to generalize things a bit. Suppose I have another module for Kazmuli, I might try to define conformal blocks where I have, let me keep it like that, which are associated to elements of some other module. So how would I do that?
Wait, is this the elements or just the module itself?
So this conformal block became a linear map from the module into a collection of meromorphic functions.
Okay.
And I want to produce a generalized conformal block, which is going to be a linear map from another module, a different module, into spaces of meromorphic functions. So physically, these are just correlation functions to the currents, but you might try to add some other local operators in your correlation functions, which are not a current, but which transforms in an interesting way under the symmetry.
Is a vector module the analog of conformal descendants of the identity?
Yes, that's right. So in conformal field theory, putting this vector V at P will be putting a descendant at this location.
And I want to consider more general operators than the identity.
That's right. I would like to consider things that are not descendants of the identity. Right. So right, in the original conformal blocks, it's like I've intuitively at any point of the surface I put the identity operator. And then I can bring currents there to produce other local operators. That's what I'm doing here. But what if I put here something which is not the identity and is not obtained from currents.
These are like Katz Moody descendants, not like.
That's right. These are Katz Moody descendants. So one thing we can do is we can try to generalize this vacuum module. And here, so for example, you could take some representation, finite dimensional representation, of your Lie algebra. Okay? You can build a module of Katz-Moody this way. You have, instead of the vacuum, you have a bunch of vectors which transform in this representation under the zero modes. So concretely, GA0 acts on I, has some structure constants, IJ, J, okay, for some representation of weight lambda, infinite dimensional representation of weight lambda. And then, on top of this, you put the usual descendants. So you can define a module like this. This is sort of induced from this finite dimensional representation. I thought they're called wild modules, but if somebody in the audience can confirm or give me a good name for them, a concise name for them, I would really appreciate. In physics, you just call them Verma modules, but it's not quite correct.
These are wild modules. These are wild modules.
Okay. So wild modules could be induced by other representations which are not finite dimensional. I'll think about that in a moment, but let me keep it finite dimensional representation and call them wild modules. Okay.
I think it will be literally Verma modules if you start with a Verma module of G.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes. So now let me try to define the definition of conformal blocks that I was giving here.
What about the positive modes? The positive modes, what do they do to the module?
Sorry, of course. The positive modes kill it still. J and A acting on I is 0 if n is greater than 0. So they kill this. They're not going to kill this because of commutation relations. So J1 acting on this, for example, it's a multiple of this. You can find it with the commutation, applying commutation relations, and so on and so forth. And if you're not done any conformal field theory, this can be very unintuitive, but I have a limited amount of time. Well, I guess it's unlimited because it can go week after week after week after week. But and I can come back to any things that are not, to the many things that are not clear. But I wanted to get somewhere. So let me try to now define something. So this, for now, I'm keeping the point where I'm doing my manipulations fixed. Okay, so this is just going to be some number. Then now I can try to define now this. So I want this to be a meromorphic function, meromorphic one form now on C, with a pole at this point. So I'm going to convert these statements into an OPE statement. I want the currents approaching the point T to behave in the following way. So this I for now is just a symbol. It just means that I'm trying to do something similar to this, where I'm inserting descendants, where I'm trying to insert this module instead of the vacuum module at that point. Okay. And I can do it by sort of constructing again this infinite power of.
So OIFB is some fixed current?
Hmm?
So this OIFB is some fixed current?
So OIFB is a symbol that stands for, I'm going to do conformal blocks where I've inserted this vector I instead of inserting the vacuum.
On the top right corner, you're multiplying the symbol by a current?
I'm saying, I'm going to look at these rational meromorphic functions again, but now instead of saying that they only have a pulse when the j's come close to each other, I'm also going to allow a pole when z goes close to p. But this pole is going to be a simple pole of this form.
So the right-hand side is the definition for the second row from the left-hand side.
That's right. So this guy will be now meromorphic one form with a simple pole proportional to this. This will be a meromorphic form in two variables with a simple pole here proportional to this, and so on and so forth. Okay? And if you now repeat this story, where you have put this OI here, you are going to find this whole other module, not vacuum module.
So if I have higher poles, then is there an analogous statement in terms of modules?
I'll get there later. Okay. So, as you see, in a sense, in terms of this, if you think about J as a connection, which I erased, but this connection is starting to have regular singularities at this point. But anyway, okay. So this not noticing when I'm doing these calculations, I'm keeping the point fixed, the point P fixed.
So the index I runs over what now?
I runs on the representation R lambda, and I should put the lambda here to remember. Okay. So, for example, for SL2, this could have been a two-dimensional representation. That's a very nice thing to do. Now, as I'm saying, here I'm just looking at the dependence on Z, on the position of the J's. I made no statements about the position of P. For every point of the curve, I will get a different space of conformal blocks, naively. Next, I would like to argue that actually there is a natural way to move the point around. So I want to get to something called the Knitzig-Chomolodzinyk-Chomolodzinyk equations. And in order to do that, I should start talking about the stress tensor. So, right. As I was saying here, so here you have all these functions of J's at separate positions. You can try to define other functions by bringing the J's together. So, for example, suppose I start with J of Z, J B of W, J, 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 J. So as I said, as I bring Z to W, there is a double pole and a single pole, right? So this is K delta over Z minus W squared, the correlation function without these two insertions, plus FAB C over Z minus W JC, J, 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 J. And now let me just define. Okay. A new symbol like this. So the regular part, I take the regular part of this expansion and I give it a name. Okay? This defines sort of a new operator, physically. sort of the regularized product of true currents. So I'm going to define the stress tensor this way. This is called a Sugawara stress tensor. This object has some nice property. The K, this H is some special number. It's the Casimir of the joint representation, second Casimir evaluated on the adjoint representation, I think. Okay. So what's special about this T? What's special is that this T allows you to change the complex structure of the surface. So you can ask what is the OPE of this T with the currents. You can ask what happens if I bring now this point close to another point. It's a somewhat tedious calculation, but the result is this. I think I'm doing it right. Sorry. Just a second. Yeah, I think so. So, oh, sorry, I should have written in a standard way, sorry. So the nice point is that if you now take a bunch of currents and you surround them by T, by a contour integral of T times a vector field, this correlation function is the same as the correlation function behaves as a conformal block without this insertion, but these points moved. So these are, say, z1, z2, z3, z4. This is the same. This behaves like a conformal block at shifted positions.
Could you phrase this by saying that the vector fields act on the Casimir, and you're explaining how this action is actually an interaction. So by the symmetry of an algebra, it acts on the category of modules, but it's an inner symmetry. It fixes every module.
Mm-hmm.
So it fixes them by moving positions by the vector field. So that's more.
Right, so you can sort of try to compare the conformal blocks where you inserted your vacuum module vectors at some point or some nearby points and find a relation between them. Find that, I don't want to. So this is very similar to what I was doing here, right? I was saying if I integrate J around a bunch of points, it sort of rotates them and inside of the algebra. If I integrate T around some bunch of points, where are some J's insertions, it moves the points. So this is two consequences. The first is that you can repeat this setup and think about conformal blocks as moving along at the formation of the Riemann surface. So conformal blocks are not just sort of flat over the space of bundles, they're also flat over the space of complex of Riemann surfaces. Again, there is a little bit of a projective issue. here there was a slight problem because the current didn't transform. Quite right under gauge transformations. Here, there is something similar. If you look at the stress tensor OP with itself, you find an extra term. So, if you didn't have this constant term, this would tell you essentially that under these transformations, T transforms as a true form, as a tensor with two indices, as a something, no, TZZ. This is a stress tensor physically, the Lomofi component stress tensor. Because of this extra term, it means that it transforms almost, right? But not quite. So again, the conformal block should be some sort of twisted D-module on the space of compact structure of the Riemann surface. Now the central charge is an important number, something like the dimension of the Lie algebra times k over k plus h. But for me now, what I find interesting is that I can take this calculation, I can take this setup where I had this extra insertion, and now study the surface where this point has been surrounded by contour integral of t, meaning the time. So this conformal block will behave like a conformal block where all has been moved. Okay. So this ends up giving you something called, so there is sort of a natural connection on this on the Riemann surface that tells you how to transport this insertion, this operator. This connection is called the KZ connection. And it roughly looks like this. It tells you that a conformal block with the insertion of this O can be naturally identified with sort of I want to do it properly. So this J minus 1 here means that, so I can take the derivative in position with the contour integral of a J around the operator. And then if I'm working with a conformal block, I know how to express this thing with an extra J in terms of the things without the J, but just using the OPEs. And so I end up with a linear differential equation on this conformal block, so on a connection on this space of conformal blocks called the Knitchik sum logical connection. Now, if you stare at this enough, so what this really means is that up to, sorry, I should probably have written it like this. I wanted to write it like this. Meaning, up to subtracting the divergence, it's just J times O. So in other words,
so there is the T in this equation?
Hmm?
There should be a T in this equation, right?
Here. No, T I already used, so I already, see, I jumped, I'm missing some steps. I took my T, I converted T into a JJ, and I checked how it happened, how it acts on the primary. I'm looking for the pole of T as it approaches O, because that's what contains the derivative. The pole comes from one of the J's. If you remember the OP, right? If I bring a J to an O, I find the pole. And then I find a regular part, which you could call J O. Okay. And so the connection, so this O of P, morally speaking, is a flat section. This conformal blocks with no insertions, so a flat section for a connection, which morally speaking, I would like to write like this. Okay? So this is only in inverted commas, because what really means is that I need to insert this. I need to bring the GA inside and take the regular part. But it's sort of the quantized version of the statement that J behaves like a connection, like a G connection. So this is sort of a quantum version of a G connection. Okay, so these conformal blocks give you a quantization of the space of holomorphic connections. So I don't know what time until when I guess I'm supposed to stop soon.
Yes, maybe you can summarize.
Yes. So summarize. There is a certain definition of conformal blocks. So if you give me a Kac-Moody algebra for algebra G, I can define conformal blocks for it. I can define them as on a Riemann surface, perhaps with a bundle on it, and perhaps with extra insertions of these, one or more extra insertions of these wild modules. Okay? And perhaps other modules. You know, here I use the wild modules. I could have used them, something, for example, I could have used them instead of a finite dimensional representation, I could have used a Verma module for the Lie algebra, something which is annihilated by the raising operators of these and just built freely from the lowering operators. This would have given me some other kind of insertions. So for Verma, and so on. So I could define conformal blocks in a sort of general setup. The conformal blocks, so these conformal blocks, as I was saying, have some.
I still have this confusion. When you say conformal blocks, what do you mean? What kind of forms do you have? So you're saying that you're thinking about that as a linear map from the module from some.
Yes, that's right. So this would be some linear map.
From the module to some other linear, to some other vector space.
That's right.
To which vector space?
Solutions of world identities.
No, but also when you have a bundle, so you think that somehow, some point decided to think about the form blocks and the sections of some T modules on Bungie.
This vector bundle, because the currents are like infinitesimal generators of gauge transformations, at least locally, has a natural flat structure on the space of bundles, and also on the space of complex structured Riemann surface, thanks to the Sugalara construction, which in particular means that you can try to move these points around infinitesimally.
I understand, but my question was different. My question was, when you say the expression conformal block, for you, is it an element of some set, or is it an element of some set?
Conformal blocks is an element of some vector space, or...
Conformal blocks are elements of some vector space.
Okay. That's right.
So, and this a priori, this vector space is what? Is it just the vector space?
So I guess that if you use your vertex algebra to define a factorization algebra, the conformal blocks will be the chiral cohomology of that factorization algebra.
And so basically what you're presenting here is that it has to construct elements of this thing.
Now on the Riemann...
Constructing from vectors and some modules. Is that...
But you also have these insertions that get one module insertions, which...
That's right. So I'm saying if you have modules for this Kathmoody, you can get various vector spaces for each choices of collections of points with these extra modules attached to them.
So you get vector spaces and you have linear maps from your modules to these vector spaces and from
Right. So I mean, for each element in the module, you get a conformal block.
Okay, so this is what I want to do. So conformal block for you is just it's an element of this vector space. I mean, this is an a priori defined vector space, which maybe depends on your insertions, but somehow when you say the word, I mean, this is something some terminology.
I say conformal block is
conformal block. You mean
in this setup, it would be this space of maps from the collection from this collection of modules into this collection of rational functions.
Sorry, so just individual conformal block, is it this space of maps or is it just one element of this space?
Well, the point is that once you give me the conformal block for the Huygens weight vector, you automatically get also the map from all the other descendants. Right, so I could have said that the conformal block.
So you're saying the conformal block is some particular element of this vector space, but somehow it also generates this map.
That's right. So it's an element of the vector space of this collection of meromorphic functions with this OPE and that OPE. Right, and then using this element, you can also build maps from the whole modules. Into rational functions. And it carries automatically also a flat connection on the, you know, a way to infinitesimally move, change the bundle, infinitesimally change the position of the points. Now, a message I wanted to now anticipate, because now I should stop, is that if you're looking at the finite dimension, at these sort of wild modules, this infinitesimal parallel transport is integrable. So you can really say, OK, I have a conformal blocks with the insertion here, and I transport this insertion around some loop on the Riemann surface, and I come back here. And I get a map from the conformal blocks to the conformal blocks. So you do get things like break group representations. There are also notions of fusing some of these punctures. So you could have a situation where you start from the conformal block without insertions, and then there is a natural map to the conformal blocks with two O's inserted nearby points, and then another linear map that tells you, you know, take one of these O's, transport it around, and come back, and then fuse it again. So you end up getting linear maps from conformal blocks to conformal blocks, which are labeled to sort of, which are associated to paths on the Riemann surface labeled by a finite dimensional representation. Although they are called Verlinde line defects. And these line defects give you a representation of a quantization of the space of local systems on the surface. And maybe next week I want to use this to make contact with quantum groups.
So I have some very stupid questions, which might illuminate Sasha's more intelligent questions. So when you wrote like the first half of that first board,
yes.
I feel like there were some unstated assumptions here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to guess what those assumptions were, and you can tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
You never said this, but there should be some underlying quantum field theory here.
No. Meaning, many different quantum field theories will share the same, will be built from conformal blocks.
Right. So as a mathematician, I say, OK, there's some underlying quantum field theory here. I'm not going to worry about what it is.
Yes.
But it's somehow there. And this JAZ, that's an operator in that quantum field theory. So when you write
yes.
an operator product expansion, what you're saying is, I'm assuming that I have some quantum field theory, don't worry what it is, I have operators with these sorts of labels, and I'm assuming that they satisfy this relation when I send the points where I'm inserting them together.
Mm-hmm. Possible. But in practice, to define this, I don't need to think about the quantum field theory at all, right? But it's true, yes.
Yeah,
these are currents in
well,
a quantum
well,
field theory.
In those brackets, what do you mean? Doesn't that mean the expectation of the operator in the quantum field theory?
Yes, it should be a candidate expectation value of these operators.
It's really just that if it was a quantum field theory, this would be a number, and there wouldn't be a bunch of choices for what that number is. Just what was here. Really, it lives in the boundary of the 3D theory. That's why it's not a number. It's not under the vector component space of the 3D theory.
Okay.
Well,
yeah,
so yeah, I mean,
I will part of the conformal theory, which is. That itself
is so, quantum theory would be sort of analytical, it's a great quantum theory is never holomorphic.
Well, I know. Okay, look, so if you take any setup in quantum field theory where along some two-dimensional surface there are holomorphic operators, so operators which satisfy classically the bar equal to zero, then you would you might recover the structure.
This might be a linguistic thing, right? Where mathematicians would say, well, assume I have a quantum field theory and it satisfies these parameters.
No, but I don't want to assume to have a quantum field theory.
Well,
indeed.
The physicist here is assume I have a quantum field theory, like assume that like you're actually
originally thinking. when people were trying to define to define rational conformal field theory, for example, they would start by defining conformal blocks and then they say, okay, if I pair them up in a good way, I get things that really behave like a quantum field theory should. These guys might or not appear in a quantum field theory. A specific conformal block might or not appear in a quantum field theory. In a quantum field theory, for example, this would be a single value function of p. Here, I just have barely a way to transport p around. Actually, in some cases, it can be integrated, as I was saying, but even if it's integrated, you get non-trivial monotony as you go around the Riemann surface. The space of local, the space of conformal blocks can be very big. Indeed, so here today that was just always thinking about the Riemann surface, which makes things very difficult for me to actually visualize in terms of concrete calculations. Once you start introducing these fancy modules, then you can get interesting conformal blocks on a sphere too. And then you can be very concrete, some rational function from the sphere with specific poles. You can really try to solve this, step by step, and try to find your conformal blocks by hand or with Mathematica. But clearly, if you want to work with Riemann surface, a general bundle, you probably need to use more powerful technology.
So if I choose a conformal block, can
yes.
I get the expectation value of OI out of it?
No, you can get. No, so there is no, if you give me a conformal block of this type, there is no way to immediately get one of these conformal blocks. A priori, there doesn't seem to be any relation between these and this. Now, if you have two O's, I'll discuss next time how you can try to relate it with something with no O's inserted to something called fusion. But this is only possible for some very special modules. And the space of conformal blocks are big. As I was saying, the space of Kac-Moody conformal blocks is roughly as big as polynomials in one forms on your Riemann surface. So they are infinite dimensional spaces. And a lot of it's only in very special situations you can restrict to finite dimensional spaces. So when people do conformal bootstrap to define two-dimensional conformal field theories, they try carefully to find situations where there are finite dimensional spaces of conformal blocks, and then try to study those, or they brace themselves for infinite dimensional spaces and use some analysis, and not just algebraic. things to define theories like Liouville or anyway, I discuss that. But part of what I want to get to is to understand ways to put some order on this space of conformal blocks that at this moment look completely unthinkable, right? Because there's infinite collection of equations on a Riemann surface. At each point, you might find new constraints. It would seem almost impossible to ever find conformal blocks. Next week, I might describe the concrete way to build conformal blocks that people that you learn in physics, you know, sewing constructions where you build up your Riemann surface out of pieces. But that raises all sorts of interesting issues. And this quantum group, this relation to quantum groups can help. Mm-hmm.
So on the diagram, why do you need two holes?
Sorry?
Why do you need two holes to appear in this?
Two points?
2 points.
No, I mean, if you want an interesting conformal block on a sphere, you need at least 3 points. So
right. No, but there you like, draw on the surface.
So here I was trying to get a linear map from a surface to a surface labeled by some non-trivial path on your surface. And to build this map, I'm going to do it step by step. I'm going to first think about smaller maps of the sort, combine them with monotomies, and then.
Those maps indicate maps on the spaces of
conformal blocks. That's right. So the spaces of conformal blocks are representations for a lot of interesting algebras, a lot of interesting structures. You start just by, you know, the sort of bare bone definition, but you can keep building on this definition, adding a lot of structure to them.
So why is it that there's this canonical map to the two insertions, though? Maybe this is a rephrasing of
it. Oh, that I have not explained at all. Yes.
The kind of categories of modules that show up here, you kind of alluded to like the Liouville theory situation as opposed to this one.
Yes.
Is there like a way you can tell a priori that studying the category of modules there is necessarily like much more analytic than for the situation that Kasmudi?
No. It is also Kasmudi. So Liouville, Kasmudi analogous to Liouville. So, I mean, if when you work with Kasmudi, things are in general, models of Kasmudi, things are difficult. When you work with wild modules, things are easier, finite dimensional.
Is there some sense, though, in which even if you try to do kind of the analog for Liouville theory, that you get sort of...
I discussed Virasoro. The Virasoro case is completely analogous. So in Virasoro, there are modules which are generic and are which are sort of similar to these Verma modules. And there are special modules which behave in a similar way of this and satisfy differential equations of finite order. So I was uncertain today if to start with Kasmudi or start with Virasoro. Perhaps Virasoro would have been a better idea. The main difficulty for me is that in Kasmudi, if you don't put a bundle, you can just say J is a one form. So I didn't have to explain this to start with. And I could get to this later. If you think about correlation functions of Virasoro, the central charge is there from the beginning, and you need to say a few more words. Maybe I would have been better to start with Virasoro, but I can do it another time.
Yeah, I should discuss actually when would be a good time to continue with it. Sorry, but it's next week. I think the week after is maybe 2 weeks at Swansea.
See you here.